now over the red wing line, right wing to a wide open tee, left circle, fires, he scores! There's a shot by Nylander, he scores! Behind the net to Tase, he shoots and scores! Doubling back, Duncan Keith, still got the jump, to a wide open tee, left circle, fires, he scores!
It's time for another episode of Blackhawks Crazy.
There goes the goaltender, Franzreb. Oh, and he shouldn't have left the net. David Kemp with a loose puck fires it down toward the empty net. He scores! Red wing line on the right wing. Bats it down behind the net. Bounces out to King. He shoots and scores!
Chris Bowden and Scott King break down the latest storylines surrounding your favorite Chicago hockey team.
Jonathan Toews into the top shelf.
Now, here they are, Chris Bowden and Scott King.
Hey, hey, how about that? We're really getting fancy here with our Blackhawks Crazy podcast. An official introduction. You'll hear other drop-ins along the way. And we're glad and thankful for the hard work our producer, Curtis Koch, and the dulcet tones of the great Ernie Skatton being a part of the podcast as well. So we're looking forward to that, grateful for that opportunity. And unfortunately, the Blackhawks weren't quite so fancy in their season opener in Prague. Finally, the wait is over, underway. The season is finally underway after a six-month wait. And I'm sure there's a level of disappointment, not only within the team, obviously within some of the fans out there, with the 4-3 loss to the Philadelphia Flyers. And I think the disappointment is most in the fact that there weren't any extended stretches of this game in Prague, Scott, where it seemed the Blackhawks carried play. This was largely a Philadelphia Flyers kind of setting the tempo, especially from the second period on. We'll get some postgame reaction from Kane and Toews and head coach Jeremy Colliton saying, okay, the first period, not too bad. But after that, it seemed the Blackhawks were chasing. And I think from that standpoint, it's probably the most disappointing aspect of coming home empty-handed without any points.
That's what I saw as well and heard on the radios. They did not dictate the play. It was the Flyers. Whether or not the stats that they also might have had some trouble with there in Prague illustrated that or not. You know, obviously a great game from Kane. Good to see Nylander contribute the way he did in his debut with the Blackhawks. And probably an okay game for Crawford. I think definitely on that wraparound for the game-winning goal, he could have been set, and he'd like that one back. But, you know, again, Corey Crawford, even after that late in the game, battled back, kept him in it the whole game. And first game, they'll work out the kinks. They got some practices before the home opener.
Yeah, and that also becomes, based on what we saw in this first game, all the more important, because you're happy that when you first see the schedule, maybe you're not too crazy that they have a six-day lapse between, you know, this game and when they're back in action Thursday against San Jose. But based on what we saw, some of the performances, you're almost happy that they might have to get two or three practices under their belt, kind of settle things down, because, you know, we've been mentioning it since we saw the schedule come out. This seven-game stretch right at the top of the season is going to be awfully important, you know, if you're going to consider yourself a playoff contender. Obviously, we saw what the St. Louis Blues did last year. You know, all is not lost in an opening month of the season. But nevertheless, you're putting seven home games in the bank right off the bat. And in that one stretch in February, or from mid-January to the end of February, where you're barely home at all of a sudden there's some urgency here. So it would have been urgency whether the Blackhawks had come away with 2 points or the zero that they are left with coming home from Prague. But, you know, when you look at it, there weren't a whole lot of guys that were kind of immune from so-so performances when you're reacting to how they played, with the exception of 88, who has himself a three-point night. Maybe a couple of other players there and there, but, you know, blame is a harsh word, but there weren't a whole lot of guys who could absolve themselves from blame after this 4-3 loss either.
Yeah, obviously DeBrincat looked good too, who we'll talk about later, and they were missing some guys. You know, DeHaan, Murphy have a chance to be two of the most valuable defensemen this year. Should have them ready for the home opener. So, and that factored into, I think, not having those guys is a weakness in shot suppression. They game total 38 shots on goal by the Flyers, 28 after the second period. Mm-hmm. So a little better in the third period, but that's something Colliton and the Hawks said that they really wanted to work on and limit this year, and they were not able to today.
You don't want that to be a recurring theme, and it was particularly tough for that third pair of defensemen guys. When you know, you look at the overall roster, if everyone's healthy, you're not expecting a Dennis Gilbert or a Slater Cuckoo to be in there in the lineup. great seventh or sixth or seventh or eighth guys, but with DeHaan and Murphy out of the lineup, you would expect a better quality on the blue line when those guys, when everyone is all healthy. Taking nothing away from Dennis Gilbert, who had himself a real nice camp. Cuckoo's fairly solid, but that first goal coming off the turnover from Dennis Gilbert and then the power play goal, that was just bad luck for Slater Cuckoo. And the shot goes off the crossbar by Lindblom, and then Cuckoo's skating in to try and clean it up, and unfortunately it goes off his body into the net. So not the greatest of days for them, but you can't simply point the finger at them. Like I said, the blame is pretty much spread around in this one, and they're going to have to regather themselves. And we mentioned the guy who was probably had the strongest game was number 88. It was him and Taves together a lot of the times with Alex Nylander. Jeremy Colleton, early in the third period, decided to put Drake Kajula up there, as he said he would normally do that. But Patrick Kane comes up with a goal and two assists in this one, and he spoke with the media and had this reaction to the 4-3 loss afterwards.
I think we made a nice goal there at the end to, keep it within reach and give us some momentum. But I think that's a period where, we want to dominate teams, and we feel like we can, especially with our transition game and the way we should be able to hold teams in their end and create momentum that way. So definitely something to improve upon. It's a big aspect of the game, that second period.
What do you try taking away from this game then?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I like that we fought back, It was 3-1. They were dominating the game. And we could have easily just, folded up and called it quits. But we fought back, made it a game, and came close to tying it up.
Well, two assists, you're going to be happy with at least your fresh start. They're going to pretty
well. Well, I mean, I think there's always things to improve upon. Preseason, regular season's always a little bit different, and kind of takes for some reason, every year it takes me a little bit to get into the game. So, whatever the numbers were tonight, I still think I have more to give to the team and can create more and have the puck a little bit more out there too. So just keep building here.
So Scott, Kane credited with an assist on the first Blackhawks goal, whether that actually was legit or not, whether he got his stick on the turnover by Ivan Provorov for the Philadelphia Flyers that led to Alex Nylander's breakaway. But that has to be a huge confidence booster for Nylander here. You could see it kind of growing during the course of training camp, and him scoring this team's first goal of the year in his first game with the Blackhawks, I think has to be a shot in the arm. And I don't think Jeremy's move to take him off that top line was any particular punishment for Nylander. It was just trying to put all the chips in a bottle, shake him up, and see if he can get some more consistent offensive firepower throughout the lineup when that was lacking through the first two periods overall.
Yeah, he moved a lot of guys around, and Nylander, as we saw in training camp, I thought he came into camp and throughout the preseason had a lot of confidence, and he was in on the offense a lot, and we continued to hear Colleton address his play away from the puck pretty consistently, and so maybe some concern there. Would have to take another look at the opener here, but for all his critics that were either in Buffalo or people skeptical about him coming here, you look what he did on a big stage to open the season for the Hawks. Pretty impressive. And that's a very skilled goal, too. His defender was on him. He kind of pulled the puck in and shot it past the guy. I think he picked the right corner of the net. It's just a beautiful goal.
Yeah, this is not by any means a final answer. He's going to have to continue proving himself when we hear the coaching staff and even himself say that. But those are the first couple of comments that we hear from Jonathan Taves talking about Nylander's performance with him and Patrick Kane on that top line.
I think we're just getting going. I think we're getting more and more comfortable together playing with Kaner. And I think once we start really knowing what the other guys are doing on the ice, plays will become second nature, and then things will just start to fall into place. And when you're not second-guessing what's going on or where guys are for support, you're going to keep plays alive and you're going to get more chances like that.
Jonathan, this is an unusually warm arena. How is the ice out?
I mean, not going to complain about the ice. It's the same for both teams, but to be honest with you, it wasn't good at all. So it is what it is.
What positives do you take away from today?
Well, it's been a good trip. I think we've spent a lot of time together, just the fellas getting to know each other. A lot of new guys, as we've said. So disappointed with the fact that we couldn't find a way to win today. Got ourselves behind a little bit. Maybe lagging a little bit in the second period, and that ended up hurting us. But I think we're seeing a lot of positives, a lot of things we can build on, and I think we'll be excited to get home and take advantage of the home ice coming up here. And obviously got to deal with jet lag again a little bit, but try and get our bodies ready for the next game, and it's going to come quicker than you think. So.
Jonathan Toews obviously frustrated with the outcome, but always, you know, using the glass half full positive spin approach that it is just one. They'll work on things, get them fixed. And as I said at the end of the post game show, Scott on WGN Radio, you know, any sport opening day is always overreactions. And while, no, this wasn't the greatest performance by the Blackhawks, you look at what happened last year. A dramatic overtime win in Ottawa, followed by a dramatic overtime win in, of all places, St. Louis. You're 2-0, 4 points in two games, and everyone's riding high. And then you see what happens over the course of the season for both the Blackhawks and the St. Louis Blues. So important not to get too high or too low. Because this is the first of 82,
and the year before that, Saad with a hat trick,
yes,
against the Stanley Cup champion Pittsburgh Penguins. So you know, one way or the other, you can't put too much into your expectations after the season opener.
Yeah, we don't want to go overboard in pumping tires, but by the same token, we don't want to help people jump off cliffs at this point. But as Jonathan said, and as we brought up too, this is a very important 7-game homestand. You cannot waste it. You have to come away doing some damage on this, because the other thing you think about is by the time that Thursday game against San Jose rolls around, we're a week, 8 days into the NHL season, and some of these other teams in the Central Division in the West, they'll have 3 or 4 games under their belt by then, and the Hawks will just have one. So you're almost already playing catch-up against some of these teams you're going to be battling it out with.
Yeah.
Let's hear from the head coach, Jeremy Colliton, from Prague after the 4-3 loss. Initially asked by reporters what he thought of the atmosphere. There were more than 17,000 fans, 17,463 to be exact, over at the O2 Arena in Prague. That is a hockey record for that particular arena. Here's Jeremy after being asked about the atmosphere as the Hawks and Flyers played in the Global Series.
Yeah, it was a great environment. Great crowd, lots of energy. I think it's obviously special for the Czech guys to come home and play, and you know, an NHL game in front of family and friends, and glad they got the reception they did. So, you know, credit to everyone who put the event on. They did a great job.
Front row on the left.
Jeremy, do you feel like the second period is where things kind of got sideways?
Yeah, we didn't mind our first period. I think, you know, ultimately, we just didn't manage the puck well enough. We turned way too many pucks over, and that's where you know, we exposed ourselves defensively. And there's going to be times in the game where it's not going your way. I don't think we made many plays, especially in the second period. But we got to find a way to limit the damage. And I thought we just, you know, we turned over. You know, pucks around the lines, and then we're exposed defensively. We turned them over at the end of our shift when we were tired, and then it makes it difficult to defend. And we, you know, I think we had our moments in the first where we were good, and I think we had our moments in the third. You ideally, you just kind of ride it out when things aren't going your way, and then you can win the game when you're good again. And you know, ultimately, when we were good again, we're trying to dig out of a 2-goal hole. So that's, to me, the tail of it.
Right side, second row.
Gilbert had the kind of rough turnover there in the first, but it seemed like he settled into the game. What were your perceptions of how he was?
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate for him. I don't want to see that for him. It's credit that he kept playing, and I thought he had some good shifts as the game went on. So, you know, he was no different. He's got to manage the puck better. And but certainly he wasn't the only one.
Left side, third row.
Coach, Nylander given a good amount of responsibility on that top line. What are you seeing out of him? And obviously he's finding the goal sheet again.
Yeah, happy for him to get one in the goal column early. He's got a heavy shot, skilled player. Finds he created some space for himself, and obviously it's a weapon. So. The more he can put himself in those situations, he can really help us.
We'll do 3 more questions, front right.
Do you read anything into the faceoffs today, or do you look at those numbers? Or?
I knew we were struggling for sure. And they got some guys who are really good, and they have a lefty righty situation on a lot of lines, so that's a benefit for them. It's one of those nights, I guess.
Left side, third row.
3-point night for Patrick Kane. You got to be happy that he's picking up right where he left off.
Yeah, he makes a difference for us. Found a way to, it didn't seem like there was much ice out there early on. Again, we didn't make many plays. We struggled to support the puck, I thought, but he found a way. He got a little bit of an opening and then made it happen.
Last question, standing up on the left, Mark.
Forgive me, I got here a little late. So much emphasis this offseason and in training camp about the team defense and getting the shots totals down against. I don't know what the final numbers, but it's 28 through two periods. Is there any disappointment that it takes time, but it hasn't clicked right away?
Yeah, we turned too many pucks over, and it's difficult. You don't have your structure. That couple seconds right after you, if you misplay the puck or they steal it or whatever it is, it's tough to defend. So we put ourselves in bad spots repeatedly, and ultimately, if we're going to have any success, we're going to have to clean it up with a puck.
There's the Blackhawks coach, Scott, talking about a great point that you made earlier with the shots on goal, and it was a struggle for the Blackhawks. There were stretches of games where they were giving up 40-plus several games in a row last season, and they have to get away from that. Unfortunately, it wasn't a 180 from what we saw last year when they're giving up 28 shots over the first two periods, 38 for the game. That number definitely has to come down. You hope with game action, guys playing together, getting a Murphy and a DeHaan back, and overall structure within forward play as well at that end of the ice, things are going to get better, and they have to get better if this team is going to make a difference. I was talking in the pregame show with Troy. We don't necessarily expect the likes of Kane and Taves and DeBrincat. We can't expect them to put up the exact same numbers that they had in career years last year. Yes, the Blackhawks have other players who are capable of picking up some of that slack, but the real difference is going to have to be in the defensive end between the goaltending and the defensive play on this team.
Yeah, for sure. It's not a coincidence that the Flyers had 15 shots on goal in the second, actually 13 in the first, so the most they have, and 10 in the third, as I said before. Most shots in the second period, not a coincidence. They get the extra goal. When you give up that many shots, you're going to lose a lot of momentum, and you're not going to have the puck to score yourself. So it's common sense and something they really, really have to fix.
All right, another big item of news. The day before, the Blackhawks took on the Flyers in Prague. As we tape her on Friday afternoon after the game, it was on Thursday. Early in the morning, just after I wake up, all of a sudden Twitter's going nuts with Blackhawks news and the word that Alex DeBrincat was signed to a 3-year contract extension. And this is really a win-win for both of them. And I guess in one way, it's a short-term win for the Blackhawks in their salary cap situation. With what Alex DeBrincat has done in his first couple seasons and seeing some of the other price tags that we saw leading up to the regular season with some of these other restrictive free agents, the Marners and the Bessers and the Lines of the world, 3 years and an average annual salary of $6.4 million for what Alex has accomplished so far, I think that plays in the Blackhawks' favor, but if Alex continues to do that for the next 3 years, then he's going to have his payday, and he's still going to be real young. He'll get out of that bridge contract that is now, and he'll be sitting pretty for a long-term deal for a lot of money.
Yeah, he's kind of gambling on himself.
A lot of cat food.
Yeah, or for Ralph DeBrindog, his dog, right. Here's some dog food. No, he's gambling on himself, and you can only imagine it's going to pay off after you've seen him go to his office in a left circle again today. And look, I think credit to everyone involved. I think everyone, like you said, DeBrincat gambling on himself, Bowman getting him really at a discount there. And I think another reason, not just for himself and the money he can get in the future, but seeing what's going on with the team right now. You're bringing in some guys who are veterans, not too old, that can play really well on D. You enhance your goaltending situation with Leonard. You got some sandpaper guys getting Shaw back. You improve up the middle. He's a smart guy. Saw what happens with the team. He wants to be here. So there's for another 3 years and maybe longer in the future.
And we use the phrase betting on himself because here's a guy who the last couple of years has made under $1 million. he's going to be making 6.4 on average. So it's a nice bet. It's not like you're really sacrificing a whole lot.
I believe it's called playing with house money at that point.
Let's hear the other point, and you'll hear Stan Bowman talk about this, is that that contract will expire in the same years as Patrick Kane's deal, Jonathan Toews' deal, and Duncan Keith's deal. So it gives the Hawks an opportunity, you know, after these 4 years are up, to hit the reset button, see where everyone is, and kind of shuffle the pieces with paydays and who's playing well, who's slipped, who do you want to invest in, who has this amount of value versus that amount of value. It's a fascinating added element to this, in that all four of those guys are going to be running out of contract time, and we'll see where they are in their production values at that point.
I think we might have to schedule a podcast for the first day of free agency.
In 2023 or 24.
Well, I'll send you the Google invite for your calendar. It's going to be, imagine how crazy that's going to be to see what's going on with all those guys.
Yeah. So let's hear from Stan Bowman. This from Thursday, shortly after the 3-year contract extension was announced for Alex DeBrincat. Here's the vice president and general manager from Prague on Thursday.
Congrats to Alex. First off, he deserves it. What a great first two seasons he's had. I think he's just scratching the surface. I think, score 40 goals in his second year, and I think he's got a lot of great years ahead of him. So, I just want to thank Jeff Jackson. He did a great job. I thought we had some really good conversations, and from the beginning, it was apparent they wanted to get a deal done, and I think it was a deal that works for both us and for him, and rewards him for his performance, and it sets us up well for where we're headed.
How quickly did this come together, and how important was it to get it done maybe ahead of time, so you didn't have to maybe worry about it for next summer?
Yeah, sometimes things don't happen right away, but it didn't take too long. I mean, we've been talking back and forth for a little bit, but at the end, it came together pretty quickly. I think it is nice to have it out of the way for now, and certainly starting the season, we can all focus on getting off to a good start, and but it didn't have to happen now. I think there's a lot of time until his first deal was expiring. So from that perspective, it just worked nice, and happy for him.
It seems like the bridge deal is kind of making a comeback in the NHL. What's the appeal of a shorter term?
Well, I think each situation is a little different. In this case, I think it was beneficial for him and for us. I think it, certainly the bridge deal, it allows the team some more flexibility over the next few years to have some cap management. And certainly the player, is going to be rewarded as you go. He's certainly still well paid in the meantime. And then he's still pretty young when he hits his next deal as well. So there's a give and take there, but I think helping the team have some flexibility while also rewarding the player, that's when, when deals come together is when both sides feel that it works for them, and that's how we got it to this point.
Unless I'm mistaken, his contract expires the same year as Kane and Toews.
Right.
Is that by design? I mean, that's how things are done in the NBA a lot, where you can kind of just like have a clean slate and distribute the money as you wish. Is that kind of by design?
By design, but we certainly knew that. We didn't just find that out now. But I think we'll have more information, and that's 4 years down the road. So we still have this year, and then the three more. I think we'll have a lot of things will change between now and then. Certainly with the salary cap itself, and with our team and our players and where they're at. So I just find that we don't have to make those decisions as to what our team's going to look like 4 years down the road. It's interesting to think about, or for you guys to write about it probably, but we don't have enough information right now, so we'll figure that out when we get to it.
You've had a lot of success kind of building a core group and then building a team around it. How important is it for you to kind of restock that core group with a guy like Alex?
Well, you're right. I think that's been one of the hallmarks of our team the last 10 years. We've had a group of guys that have stayed together and done the heavy lifting year after year. It's a team sport, and it takes a lot of different pieces to have success. So you can't have a core of 10 or 12 guys. It's not possible. But the way Alex has broken into the league, I think now nobody doubts him anymore. If you think back to his draft, he's always been proving people wrong, and there was always that question, well, he did it, but let's see him do it at the next level. And he breaks in, and he's 28 goals as a rookie, and people are still saying he did have a good rookie year, but let's see how he follows it up. And then he has 41 goals. So I think now we're past that point. I don't think anyone's wondering, can he do it? He had a great first 2 years in the league, but I think there's more to give there. I think Alex is going to continue to expand his game and become an even bigger part of our team. So knowing that we have him for this year and three more, certainly feel good about where that's going to lead our team.
Nice work overall by Stan Bowman, getting the deal done that he did. Stealth as always, because we didn't hear a lot about negotiations going on. But he jumps ahead of a potential problem, a distraction. If this had gone on for most of the season through the end of the regular season, as he would have hit restricted free agency, that cat is in the bag, if you will. We're going to get to our new segment, the Slapshot segment that we asked for on social media, on Twitter, the hashtag Slapshots, for your questions for us. It's our second episode of doing so. So we'll get to those questions in just a bit. But first, let's go from one member of Blackhawks management to another, even higher up the totem pole. Before the Blackhawks left for Berlin and Prague, I had a chance to sit down with the president and CEO of the Blackhawks, John McDonough, to get some of his preseason thoughts on the Blackhawks, the 2019-2020 version, as a very busy offseason wrapped up. We can finally put a bow on that, even though it was, I guess, kind of extended into the DeBrincat signing. But we spoke about a wide range of subjects, being back on a big stage in this global series, the importance of that to the franchise. Also, the dynamic going on between Stan and Jeremy, as it's been now about 11 months since those two have started working together even more directly once Jeremy replaced Joel Quenneville. A number of other topics as well, the 10-year anniversary of the first of the three cups, the importance of that, the importance of embracing the past while continuing to focus primarily on what's through the windshield instead of the rearview mirror. But we began our conversation, which we also played in the post-game show on WGN on Friday, talking about his feelings on what the Blackhawks have done from the end of last regular season, fast-forwarding 6 months forward, to now in the start of 2019-2020.
Well, disappointment has turned into realistic optimism. All of the areas that we needed to address, defense, goaltending, high-scoring forward, adding on to our third and fourth line, those have all been addressed, assessed. You know, for us, the name of the game is to get in. We have to be realistic. There's been a lot of change associated with this organization last year with a new coach, but Jeremy's going to have an entire offseason to put his system in. I think the addition of Mark Crawford will be invaluable. He'll have Sheldon Brookbank for an entire camp, and Thomas Mattel will be the first time that he'll have him here. He had him in Sweden. But I'm excited for Jeremy. I'm excited about the opportunity. And it's a blank canvas, but expectations are high here.
It was a long and overall successful run that Stan and Joel enjoyed together. What have been your observations so far as we approach the year mark of Stan and Jeremy working together, and how that dynamic has been?
It's a little bit different. You know, Joel, by the time he came to the Chicago Blackhawks, had a lot of success in the National Hockey League. He had won a cup as an assistant coach, incredible amount of experience. Jeremy's relatively new, but he's mature. He's very organized. He and Stan are very compatible, but it's going to be a new system, a new approach to everything, and I think it's a very healthy relationship. Time will tell, but what we need right now in our organization, we need to see progress. We need to see consistent steps forward. Making the playoffs is important. It's very critical. Expectations are high here. Our fans are accustomed to seeing, you know, parades every 3 or 4 years, and that's unrealistic. Let's be honest. If the world was fair, you'd see a parade probably 3 times a century, but it's not fair. But it's a new decade now. It's a new decade. So whatever happened in the past, we have to wipe that slate clean, and it's time for a new opportunity.
Winning and star power breeds exposure. That's the combination, and the Blackhawks have enjoyed that with, you know, Winter Classic, Stadium Series games, hosting NHL drafts, and, you know, there's that jealous
component out there from other organizations and their fans about why are the Blackhawks always in there. But how important has it been, and how important does it continue to be that you're on these marquee stages, such as the Global Series this year, too?
I think the outdoor game at Wrigley Field really triggered everything and took us to, from an exposure standpoint, from a credibility standpoint, from an acceptance standpoint, to another level. There was a sense that actually something good can happen to the Chicago Blackhawks. Now, prior to that, Rocky taking over, something different was brewing over there, and now they're going, we went to the Western Conference Finals, and now all of a sudden they're invited to play in the Winter Classic at Wrigley Field. That's incomprehensible. So that was kind of a good first step, and it kind of set the table for a lot of the success that we have. But I believe that the Blackhawks are good for business. So we've played 6-7 outdoor games. This is our second trip to Europe. The game in Prague and the game in Berlin sold out within an hour. So it's high demand. The team is very popular, I think, globally. But it's not just about participating in these games, it's winning these games. When we played in Finland in 2009, we wound up 1-0-1. We captured 3 out of 4 points. But we haven't been successful in those outdoor games. I think we're 1-5 or 1-6. But it's a long way to go for one game, but we're proud to be invited.
The emphasis in the organization, especially since you and Rocky have put your stamp on it, is constant improvement, looking forward, being better than you have been. But by the same token, there's always been that respect to individuals and teams who have been great in the past. As you look back and celebrate as much as you can what happened 10 years ago and the first of the three championships, how important is that as well to bring those memories back while still looking through the windshield instead of the rearview mirror?
Well, I think we're going to reflect on it because it's a it's an anniversary year. It's a 10-year anniversary. But we're not going to, I think, get swept up in the emotion of it. I think it's the appropriate thing to do to recognize it, to bring these players that brought the first championship back after 49 years. But we've moved on. It's younger players. In some ways, it's some of the same cast of characters, but you know, we think we've got the right formula to win, and we hopefully someday someone looks back on this year and they look back at this as a tribute season.
How closely, in coming from a couple of other organizations before coming to the Blackhawks, do you still pay attention to the Chicago sports landscape and what is happening with other teams, be it the Bears or the baseball teams or your fellow tenant here? And you know, how close do you celebrate, empathize with what they're going through? And you know, are there any other executives, not that you necessarily have to name names, but you know, you pick up a phone and talk to every once in a while?
Well, realistically, just the nature of our business, Chris, it's hard to win one. It's hard to win once. Because after you win once, you become the hunted. You're not going to surprise anybody anymore. Every building you go into, it's going to be the defending Stanley Cup champion. It's hard to win. And other teams are also trying to beat you. They're getting paid to beat you. So, you know, to win three in a decade, we're very proud of that. And I do empathize with what other teams are going for. And I'm, you know, I know George McCaskey, and we went to high school together, and I've met Theo on a number of occasions and have great respect for them. And obviously the Bulls are going in the right direction, and the White Sox won in 2005. But it's not easy. It's not easy. So we feel very, very fortunate, yet there's an obligation because our fans have had this taste of success, and that's what their expectations are. I think with the advent of, now that you know social media has taken complete effect, just the challenge to analyze every single move that's made, you've got to set yourself back from all of that. You can't get caught up in all of that. But, you know, you pull for all these Chicago teams to do well. I'm from Chicago. I'm from here. But but it's challenging, and I'm sure they're going to prevail in the near future.
We began talking about your hopes and expectations, and as you bring up the fans, what's your sense from the people you come across, whether it's at the United Center or out on the street running errands or things like that? What sense do you get from them about how they feel about this team this year? And if you had a message to Hawk fans as we start the season here, what would it be?
Well, after last season, they were extremely frustrated because 2 years in a row, we didn't make the playoffs, and the year before, we were swept in four games after leading the Western Conference during the regular season. So there's frustrations, but there's optimism because everything that we felt that we needed to shore up has been. But this needs to play out. It needs to unfold. As long as our fans believe that we are doing everything we possibly can to make good decisions for today and long term, I never am concerned about their allegiance. It's if they ever feel as if we're falling short of that. So we're committed to this for the long term. We certainly need some things to go our way. We've got a lot of good young players, a lot of good young players in the pipeline who we're excited about.
Slapshot questions. Tweet your questions to the guys at Boda Tweets and at Scott King Media for your questions to be read on the podcast.
We go back to back on with two men with great voices, John McDonough and Ernie Skatton, who are lead-in to hashtag Slapshots. Yes, our listeners and our Twitter followers' questions during the game on Friday. We asked folks to fire away at their questions. We got a handful of them. Also on the Blackhawks Crazy Facebook page, right, Scott?
Yeah, so people can send in. We'll be mentioning a lot on Twitter before games and stuff going on.
So how much angst is out there? I saw some of it on my tweet deck feed from some people who weren't necessarily hashtagging us, but let's get the level of anger, concern, or forget about it. Don't worry about it. What do we got so far?
Well, here's one, and we don't have to answer the question because it's just an example of people being a little jumpy with their questions and comments. Bart Tracy said, this must have been early in the game, things don't look much different so far. Too old of a team now. Couple minutes later, just as I say that, Kane to Cat, pretty spicy play.
It's the roller coaster. It's the glass case of emotions that everybody
he did
is in.
Correct himself, though. So, you know, he owned up to it. But our first actual question comes from, and this is on a Facebook group. So you can follow on a Facebook group. You'll see more of the content. The Facebook page, Blackhawks Crazy, kind of gets limited by the algorithm of Facebook. Very complicated. But Mark Zuckerberg hates hockey and the Blackhawks. So Melissa Kwiatkowski, who actually has helped us out at the convention with some photos and videos, asked, what players have you excited based on today and why?
Have me excited? Well, the fact that Nylander was able to come through and make a play like he did on that first goal, I like that. And beyond that, I don't know if anyone particularly stood out. Here was the weird thing. I brought this up. David Kampf was getting absolutely killed in the faceoff circle. I think he was 0 for 8 at one point. I think he finished 4 and 9, you know, 4 out of 13. But in that first period when the Hawks had 11 shots, 7 of them came from the Kubalik, Kampf, and Saad line. So that was really weird. I mean, for losing all the faceoffs to get that many shots on goal, it just goes to show what the offensive capabilities just might be for that line. I generally like Kubalik. He had some good plays in this game as he made his NHL debut back in his home country. Beyond that, like we were talking about earlier, I don't know if anyone was really immune from any type of criticism, you know, with the exception of Kane and the 3 points. Nylander made a nice play. You know, very, very quiet. By the way, Kubalik did tie for the team lead with 4 hits as well with Kajula and Dennis Gilbert. So beyond that, it's a small sample size for me. I don't know anyone else for you, Scott.
A few. Yeah. One didn't even play today, but I'll get to him. Yeah, I'll go with Nylander too, because not only did he score and have we seen him jumping on the offense throughout the preseason, but that was such a high skill level of a goal, right. I thought. You've kind of have seen
hey,
that from
everyone. Said they know it's there.
Exactly.
That part of it
exactly.
There.
For sure. And that's, I mean, you know, even if it takes a while to work on his defense, you're going to see highlight real goals like that from him, I think. So I'm looking forward to watching some of that. You know, Robin Leonard didn't play today, and I think Corey Crawford is your guy. I think he's probably the number one all season, unless something really goes downhill for him. But I'm anxious to see what Leonard can do during the regular season as a member of the Hawks.
And that's going to be an interesting call, because Corey was not Corey let in one bad one, maybe some can argue a second bad one there tonight, that being the first goal by Konechny.
Sure.
And, you know, he had in the exhibition that they lost 6-0 to Washington, Tom Wilson went over the left shoulder on that shot. Konechny went over the left shoulder. There was a second goal tonight that went over that left shoulder as well. And then the Raffle goal, the fourth goal, his awareness of Raffle going behind and being quick enough and closing up the five hole there. So Corey's left that door open after one game. And to me, that's going to be an interesting decision on the home opener. Do you let Corey see if he can bounce back, or do you see Leonard, who hasn't played, who will not have played since last Sunday, to the following Thursday? That's a long gap. It could be 2 weeks before he plays.
Yeah.
So that's going to be
it is, but isn't the UC's Corey's house though? Won two cups. You know, he wasn't that bad. I think that could really shake up the mentality maybe of their goalie tandem, and maybe some confidence there if he starts if he starts going guy in, guy out.
It's already a curious decision after one game.
Yeah. No, it'll be very interesting. So I think mainly those two guys I was looking forward to see how things progress with throughout the season. And next question here, and this is
who's
from
our next slapper.
The next Facebook question here from the Facebook page. Paul Berry, a Hall of Famer fan of the Blackhawks Crazy Podcast, said, aside from Murphy and DeHaan that they can't get back fast enough, why are the Hawks struggling so much with puck possession?
Well, you can start with faceoffs in this game, because they only finished with 38. It was 27% in the first period, and some puck management issues. You heard Jeremy talk about fighting to get out of their zone, and this was a bugaboo last year. And through one game at least, the old we have our training camp under our belt, and we should be moving forward. Unfortunately, that didn't happen against a team that finished just 1-3-3. In the preseason, in the Philadelphia Flyers, who themselves are working under a new coach and getting used to a new coach's system. So that certainly has to take a jump up, and that also plays into the 7-game homestand. You're home, you're not traveling, you should have more practice time. And even though these loose ends are appearing again after game one, you can't spend a whole lot of time needing to fix that. It has to come together quickly. So the whys are, the communication not there, the execution not there. I think it's a combination of things. You got any thoughts on that?
Yeah, for faceoffs, first off, the Flyers went over 62% for the game. So, that's brutal. That's so much time that you're not having the puck off the draw, obviously. And we talked about shot suppression before. Those numbers were way too high. So those are the biggest ways that you can get control and dictate the play right there, which you pretty much already addressed, Chris. Taking a quick peek to see if there's ones on Twitter you want to get to. I think maybe we already addressed them, and there's one more. Oh, here's a fun one. On the Facebook page, from Guy Batista, great name, not sure if it's real. Why is the defense so crappy?
Well, we were just talking about that with the puck management, and it kind of ties into crappy. Well, yeah, it wasn't that great in this game against the Philadelphia Flyers. I'm fairly confident that they're going to be able to find things, especially when you get a couple of there are some people here's the weird thing. For all the gnashing of teeth and wringing of hands over a combination of Seabrook and Mata, that was probably their best defensive pair again to start the regular season here. It was their best one in the preseason, despite the foot speed limitations that they have. They were fairly solid in that game, and obviously that leads to the screams of, oh, well, if they're the best, where are we going to be? And I think they will get better if once Murphy and DeHaan do come back and that's no slap against Gilbert and Cuckoo. But by the same token, I don't think Duncan and Gustafson had their best games, and Jeremy even split them up in the third period to try and kind of separate their struggles at all if possible. So yeah, that word, that adjective for the defense applies for the last two seasons. So it's time in the seven-game homestand to take steps towards fixing that. It's going to be crucial that they do.
Yeah, I agree. I think those two guys come back and probably play on Thursday. It might take a little bit, but things are going to improve for the D. And I'll say, going back to Gilbert, he was put in a tough situation where kind of with you didn't know if Murphy is going to play or not. He didn't know if he was going to go or not. Obviously, you always got to be ready. There's a big stage. And he's someone that I think I just asked Carlton, it might have been the last preseason game, about his tenacity, about the way he plays tough. And Carlton just kind of talked about how he likes his overall game and really liked him. So I'd say he's a guy that you'll see back. When there's an injury, he'll play a little bit as a Hawk this season.
Yeah, and I think it was a growing pain moment. We heard Jonathan Toews talk about the conditions in there too. This is not to provide an excuse for the kid. And to be quite honest, I was happy he got the opportunity in the opener, because I think he earned it during the preseason. Yeah. Duncan Keith raved about him a couple of days prior to that. And the physical element that he brings to the game, a couple of big hits in that game against Berlin, that preseason finale against Berlin. He mixed things up here at the United Center, and that's an element that they don't have on their defense. He's been largely steady, and beyond that, what should be pointed out, we talk about the turnover, but he had one shift early in the second period, early in the midway point of the second period, where he had a block shot, a hit, and a takeaway. So, you know, he if people didn't notice that, he very quietly got himself back into the game, and I was happy he got the opportunity. I feel bad that he has that one glaring moment, in a one-goal game.
It's the first goal. It's early in the game.
That ends up staining him a little bit. But he's a Buffalo, a tough Buffalo kid and a Golden Domer. So I'm sure he'll bounce back. And I'm probably of the mind that, he's right there at the very least with Cuckoo. If the other six guys are healthy, he'd be the one on standby, and it could be a situation where they split the differences, split hairs between Cuckoo and Gilbert, even though Cuckoo would have to go through waivers in order to go back down to Rockford, and that jumped up and bit the Hawks with the Carl Dahlstrom situation earlier in the week when Winnipeg was able to gobble him up. But I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing for the Hawks too. No slap against Dahlstrom, but they're pretty deep in terms of those defensive guys, whether they're going to be Rockford or Blackhawks, back end of the Blackhawks blue line core, that they have a number of guys that they can probably pick and choose from. So is that a wrap on our questions for this week so far?
I believe so. I think we'll cap it there. A couple similar ones. We addressed them all.
But listeners, we will be tweeting the same request out again on Wednesday. Scott and I are going to go check out the Blackhawks final full practice before the home opener on Thursday against the San Jose Sharks. So our next podcast will come your way Wednesday afternoon, Thursday morning drive times for either, whenever you want to take a listen to it. We figure it's pretty important to kind of regroup, reassess, and kind of build up for the home opener, especially since we have nearly a week of time to kill between now and then. And we'll bring a couple more interviews with guys and also take a look at some of the amenities, a little deeper look at some of the amenities at the United Center this season for Blackhawks and Bulls games as well. Had a chance to talk to some of the Blackhawks executives about that. So any final thoughts here? Just take a dose of medicine, calm down. It's one game. Right?
Just chill. Yeah. Netflix and chill. It's going to be fine, everybody.
Oh, and by the way, how is Fonzie?
Oh, thank you. Yes, I did. I interviewed Henry Winkler earlier today, Friday, and he was great. He's very generous with his time, and he's had a really hectic tour promoting this new children's book called Alien Superstar, about an alien who becomes famous by accident. And great stuff.
Someone stole my story.
I know, right? It's your autobiography. But it's a great stuff on working with, I figure everyone asked him about happy days. I told him that My parents let me watch Night Shift. They wanted me to watch Night Shift when I was a kid, and that was a great movie. I asked them about working with Keaton, Sandler, and, of course, Barry. So it should be a good story with video for Forbes coming out shortly.
Very good. Well, that's cool that he was cool.
Yeah. About it. Thank you.
And all you guys are cool for listening. We really appreciate it. Again, we'll come your way again Wednesday afternoon or Thursday morning, whenever you want to take a listen to it. We hope to put one out after the Blackhawks practice on Wednesday ahead of the home opener. Thanks to you for listening. Thanks to our producer, Curtis Koch. Thanks to Ernie Skatton for lending us his voice and adding some further quality to this podcast. And we'll talk to you again on Wednesday afternoon.
Win the Stanley Cup!
Thanks for listening to the Blackhawks Crazy Podcast. Tell a friend, subscribe, and join the conversation. And follow the guys on Twitter @BowdenTweets and @ScottKingMedia.
That was great!